Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. I'm your host, Marty Bennett, and this week on the Roundup, we're going to be answering three important questions we've been hearing from international educators over the last few days. Before we get to those questions, we want to say a particular thank you and welcome to those joining us live on Facebook, those watching us on repeat, either on our Facebook page or our YouTube channel, and especially those that are have subscribed to our podcast and are making the Roundup a part of their weekly listening habits. So thanks so much for including us in your work week. And we're hoping today will provide some additional information for you, as we do each week, to help you get a better sense of what's going on in our field in international education. And as we do each week, we start with our SMIE Consulting newsletter, called All the SMIE News Fit to Share. That's social media and international ed news. That comes out Monday morning, and I'll drop the link to this week's episode or this week's newsletter edition. And you're welcome to subscribe from our newsletter or on our website at smieconsulting.org/subscribe. And you'll be able to drop in your email address and other contact information to get the email, get the newsletter directed into your inbox every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And each week from that newsletter, we take three of the stories or themes that we've seen develop in the course of the last week or so, and we put together the Roundup on Wednesdays to kind of go more level, more in-depth, next level kind of analysis as to how these stories can impact what you do with your international admissions office and recruitment strategies. We focus on solutions here on the Roundup. There are problems out there in international ed, no doubt. Everybody's aware of many of them. And what we try and do is shed some light on what these issues are and what how they can be used or analyzed or adapted to suit your needs in international admissions, international student recruitment, and larger international ed concerns. So let's get right to the questions. This week, we start with how are U.S. colleges recruiting without travel? And we touched on this a little bit last week because right now, this is the typical season when some admissions reps have already been on the road for 3 weeks, particularly those that recruit in India, where fairs and tours have been going on regularly for the last few years in India, starting in August. Those aren't happening this year. Those have turned digital. A lot of the traditional tour and fair providers in those countries and others have relied on digital formats to connect students to universities in the United States and other countries. So the real issue that we're grappling with these days is how do we really do recruitment without travel? Now, for many of you who don't have the recruitment budgets to travel the globe and recruit students wherever they are or in your target markets directly, you might be going, well, that's nothing new. I've been doing that for years. Armchair recruitment is certainly how many U.S. colleges have made progress over the last couple decades by not having the money to go abroad. They focus on key markets. They focus on digital strategies. They work with overseas partners as well. And that's what I covered in my most recent article for IDP Connect USA that looks at without travel, how are you recruiting international students this fall? And I talk about a worst case scenario for the traditional road warrior in international admissions work. This fall couldn't be any worse than what we see now, other than a worldwide internet outage that would prohibit almost every form of communication we would have with prospective students, other than maybe smoke signals. We might have to revert to that. But what has happened in this scenario with COVID-19 still ravaging many parts of the globe, even though it's been contained in certain areas because of the mobility issues of travel that's been restricted for many months and still is in many parts of the world, that even though exceptions are being made for international students to travel, it's not the other way around, where U.S. Folks, international admissions folks in particular, cannot go overseas to recruit in many countries. It's just not allowed. There's still travel bans in place because of how poorly the U.S. has been handling the pandemic. And even if we could travel, doesn't mean we'd be let into schools that have many international schools that where students, where our college and university representatives might be going, would normally have been going this fall, have very limited visit policies. And there may be quarantine before you're allowed to visit, and that just isn't practical or even doable for someone who is typically moving around every day, every other day, to different cities, different towns, different countries to recruit students. So what is happening in terms of how universities are relying on non-travel-related recruitment efforts? It's basically boiled down to the two other pillars of international student recruitment, digital means and partners, overseas partners. And when we talk about digital means, we're talking a lot of different factors that could be times when when you know you aren't going to be traveling. It's maybe a time to focus on your website because that is still the number one way prospective students and their parents will get information about who you are and what you have to offer as an institution. It's also where most prospective students get turned off. Never even fill out a contact form or apply because it's impossible to find the information easily about what it takes to be admitted as an international student, what the costs are, all of the various academic programs you offer. So if that information is not easy to find, then there are challenges there. And this is the time to focus on that website. And it's also a time to look at why you recruit in certain markets, maybe why you've done a travel to certain markets that haven't been producing. Why aren't you doing recruitment or targeting particular countries that have been growing in popularity in terms of a destination to either your institution, your state, or to the United States? Is this also a time to focus on how you're or where you're viewed in terms of college search engines? What profiles do you have either as part of your lead generation strategy to get student prospects in the pipeline to then work through your communication flow and recruit and hopefully have them apply and enroll? Are you taking advantage of your social media in terms of the kinds of platforms that increasingly students are using to find out information about U.S. colleges? You still have the main ones, YouTube, Facebook, how are they communicating with each other? How are they expecting to communicate with you once they have found an institution that they want to learn more about? How engaged are your current students in your recruitment strategy, either as ambassadors or as part of your Comflow messaging or all variations, live chats, peer-to-peer communications? Those strategies are increasingly vital to your success. What are you doing or what are you planning now as part of your mobile apps strategy, or do you have one for your office, your campus for international students? Are you doing any retargeting or social ads, and how is your messaging changing due to the pandemic and how campus life is currently for your students? Are you doing informational webinars since you're not doing physical visits? Are you doing webinars with Education USA, with what I've seen a lot of are groups of colleges of similar types or from a particular region doing group events, trying to connect with schools and students in particular regions and opening it up to school counselors through CIS or through Education USA or other organizations. I mentioned last week we had our first United World Colleges virtual visit days, where we connected 48 colleges with 19 different UWC schools around the world that are all IB schools. So what are you doing differently in terms of your digital strategy to connect with prospective students? Because if you had relied on going to large fairs and tours as interest generators for your lead generation for your admission cycle funnel, and that's not an option, if that was your primary case, how are you replacing that? Or do you have, in terms of web content, do you have in key markets that you've identified, if you have that, do you have multilingual web content available for those particular markets you're going after? So these are all pieces of the puzzle on the digital side that institutions really need to be connecting with. And if you're not already aware on some of the basic numbers here, the folks at We Are Social and Hootsuite, they've done, they compile a lot of global data on mobile, digital, and social usage. And right now, over half the world's population now uses social media on a monthly basis. 99% of those that are using social media are doing so with their mobile devices. So this report also shares that two-thirds of every man, woman, and child on the planet has their own mobile phone. And it's not just a digital-first approach to communication, and in this case for student recruitment, digital-first has to be a priority and is the priority in this world, but it's also a mobile-first one. And we've talked in the past about how mobile-friendly is your website. And that is no longer just a nice option to have. It is a prerequisite for any successful site, whether it's a college search engine site, whether it's your own institutional site, whether it's landing pages for different events you have. They all need to be mobile friendly. If they're not, it's missed opportunities and likely the loss of interest in students if they can't view your information clearly and concisely and make connections on their phones. So that's the digital first is the most important way of reaching international students these days, particularly in a post in the COVID world we're living in. Partners are an important part of the puzzle. We've talked in the past about how domestically based international students are still are an important part of the numbers of international students in the United States, with over 150,000 international students at English language programs, U.S. high schools, as well as community colleges that are prime recruitment areas for institutions in the United States to recruit international students. Some institutions see domestically based international students as their largest single source market for in terms of territories for new internationals each year, particularly at the undergraduate level. So what are you doing with partners, either domestically based high schools, community colleges, English language providers, or overseas institutional partners, agencies that you might be contracting with, Education USA, other third parties that work directly with students to engage them in applying to the U.S. Colleges and universities. So these partners can be an essential element of what you're doing. We're talking about alumni even that you have. U.S. Commercial Service has been doing webinars for years to connect institutions with agents. You may have institutional partners that are becoming increasingly important in this time of COVID-19, and we'll talk about that in answering our next question, or one of our later questions today. But you see some of these institutional partners as future room where institutions might be looking at dual degree programs or 3+2 programs for bachelor's and master's programs with partners. So these are the kinds of things that are becoming increasingly common and increasingly need to be an important part of your overall recruitment strategy. They're not always going to be all first year students that'll be coming your way, but they certainly can. These partners overseas can help you generate name brand recognition in particular markets, and also potential streams of students to come to your institution by your exposure to their students overseas. So making that a part of these two elements, the digital as well as your partners, making those two elements, this is your only option this fall, and even this whole academic year in terms of recruiting tools that you have to reach prospective students. So that's our first question out of the way: how U.S. colleges are recruiting without travel, focusing on those two main pieces of the recruitment strategy in terms of what holds many U.S. institutions up for international recruitment. But part of what we also look at when you decide where you're going to recruit is looking at the available data on where students are coming from. And we've talked in the past about the difference between Open Doors data, which is a year old data by the time we see it each November. And we also talk about the CVIS by the numbers reports. The last one came out in January of 2020, and I did an analysis about that data back then. But we now only now are seeing a separate DHS data sort or of that same data, actually 2019 data, that shows the decline that we talked about back in January when this first came out. So I'm referencing here is in terms of what does SEVIS data really show. That's our second question of the day. And what that data shows is for those not familiar, SEVIS by the numbers reports out through the Department of Homeland Security. They report out all F1 and M1 visa students that are in the United States, and that's for both academic and vocational studies. And that showed that there are students from over 225 countries and territories pursuing 1,353 different primary majors in the United States. This is 2019 data. Now, I raise this point here by this particular, it's a Pi News article, and normally I'm a big fan of Pi News and the work that they do in covering international on a global scale is really phenomenal, and they have a lot of ground to cover. But in terms of this article here, U.S. SEVP data, it's basically comparing 2019 to 2018 numbers. This includes not just the numbers that we see in Open Doors, which are FM and J and other visa categories that are currently enrolled at U.S. institutions or on OPT. That's all post-secondary. This includes all the F and M visas, not J's, and interestingly, that are currently in the United States. Actually, it does include J's because it doesn't say that in the article here, but it does actually include F, M, and J's because that's all of what is involved in SEVIS. 1.52 million, 75% of which called Asia home. There is a drop. And I reported this back in February when I did a blog on this, and I'll drop the links to both the current Pi News article and my original blog from back in February. This data shows that about a 2% drop in terms of the January 2020 numbers compared to March 2019. Those are the two apples and apples that we're looking at. The SEVIS, the Pi News article doesn't really document what that is. But it does show just the overall numbers and that no surprises that in terms of where those students are coming from. China, India, South Korea are the top three, followed by Saudi Arabia, Brazil, Canada, and then Vietnam. Actually, Japan than Vietnam. Interestingly, Japan has more on the Open Doors list. Vietnam is in sixth place, whereas on the SEVIS numbers, Japan still outguns Vietnam by only about 3,000 on the SEVIS numbers. But that includes, again, not only post-secondary, but also ESL, high school, and vocational, which apparently has a few more Japanese students in those than Vietnamese. So that's important to keep in mind, that you look at these numbers. They do some geographic breakdown, and I have to unfortunately call out the Pi News on their geography skills here. They lump that impressively. There's a bump in the number of students coming from South America increased by 3,564, with growth from Dominica, Nicaragua, and Cuba, which are not South American countries. They are Central American and the Caribbean countries, to counterbalance the decrease in from Venezuela, which was minus 1,500 students. So poor marks for geography skills on the part of the Pi News writing this article. But this is data from the 2020 January 2020 numbers that compared 2019, what they're saying 2019 and 2018 numbers. So there is that decrease that is important to see. They also include a brief review of the secondary school numbers that of China represented of all K through 12 students in the U.S. on F and F visas, 50% were from China, followed by South Korea, Vietnam, Mexico, and Brazil. And that jibes with the data that I presented back in February about the differences here. And I broke it down into the five major categories here of associates, bachelor's, master's, PhD, ESL, and high school. That's actually six categories. But you get the point here in terms of that. And for each category, like English language studies, Brazilians are actually the top of the list. So it's a lot of interesting nuances in the data that both the folks at the Pi News present, and then also on my February article from earlier this year on what that data looks like, why it took DHS 10 months or 9 months to do an analysis of this data, I don't know. But certainly that shows up that there was a declining trend already from 2019 to early 2020, and it looks like that will accelerate in this fall when data, if ever, gets released. We'll be keeping an eye on that, and they never really tell you when it's coming from DHS in terms of the CVIS by the numbers data. We may actually see the open doors data before we see the next CVIS data. So we'll see what happens there in terms of fall enrollments. So obviously, Open Doors, we know, doesn't cover this fall. It'll have a new international student enrollment survey, snapshot survey, that they'll put out. They're probably collecting that data in the next month or so. And those will be very different, obviously, from this year to next. So we'll certainly keep you posted on what that looks like. Now, let's get on to our third and final question of the day. And that is, what are starting remote options looking like overseas? Now, this is looking at this question a couple different ways. We're looking at how U.S. colleges are leveraging overseas partners to help educate and house our portions of their incoming class this fall that has not been able to make it for studies, for direct studies this fall. And we'll all take a look at what's happening in Vietnam about how their students who did return home when the pandemic first hit, and Vietnam is a country that has done very well in managing the pandemic, and the challenge is now their students have not been able to return to their regular institutions, not just to the U.S., but other countries as well. And there's an article I'll be sharing from University World News that has shows that in Vietnam there are over 70 different institutions that have overseas programs there that are now serving as homes, temporary homes for Vietnamese students to continue their studies, and that's interesting to see that. And you see it from some of the major Vietnamese universities: Vietnam National University Ho Chi Minh and Hanoi. You see it in Thon Duy Duc Thanh University, Can Thao University, University of Da Nang, that are all ranked internationally, but they're serving, as well as Hanoi University of Science and Technology. It's one of the top 500 universities in the world in Vietnam. You see 70 universities in Vietnam are being programs, international programs being offered, 452 international programs offered through 70 universities in Vietnam. So that's encouraging that students there have the ability to get plugged in. Are they plugged into partners from their universities that they're studying at overseas, and the article doesn't make that clear, or are these just institutions that are offering programs to Vietnamese students regardless of where they may be permanent or more permanently studying overseas? So it's not clear on that, but there are many institutions that are doing that, countries that are doing that. And we're seeing, like in the United States, we've shared in the past few weeks what INTED has been promoting through the Council of International Educational Exchange, CAIEE. That is a U.S.-based company that is primarily a study abroad provider, had laid off 600 people back in the early days of the pandemic when study abroad just fell apart in the spring term. And they offered, I think they had 30 or 35 partner institutions around the world that were physically able to educate and house students that might be coming to the United States for degree studies that aren't able to come physically, that are able to begin their work, and to help partner the CIE, their campuses and offices overseas, with several universities in the U.S. I think 8 or 9 took them up on that offer. But there are also other institutions, University of Arizona, we've mentioned in the past, through their University of Arizona Global Program, has tie-ups with Indian universities where students there could begin their studies before coming to the Arizona campus. University of Connecticut has done that successfully as well. They have a number of students from China that are able to begin their studies at partner institutions of University of Connecticut. For those UConn Chinese new admitted students for the fall, they were able to begin their studies at East China Normal University in Shanghai and the University of Nottingham's campus in Ningbo. That are two places where UConn admitted Chinese students were able to start their freshman year from two of their partner institutions in China. So there are other campuses that are doing this well, and frankly, a lot of numbers that we're seeing for fall terms are, and this is true not only at UConn, and we profiled University of Arizona last week in a story in the newsletter, that they are counting their new international students in their enrolled numbers, even if those students are beginning their studies overseas, either remotely learning through university systems or through partner institutions. They're counting them as part of their enrolled students. And obviously they're well within their rights to do that, but that's something that when you look at the numbers of enrolled students in the fall, this fall, on campus versus overseas, remote learning, those distinctions aren't always made when you see those numbers. So I've been surprised, frankly, by the number of campuses that have been that have reported so far that their international numbers have not crashed. But a lot of it seems to be because they're counting some of their international students that have decided to start online in those new fall numbers, even though they're not physically in the United States. So I think we'll see a lot of that. A lot of registrar's offices, a lot of marketing offices around the U.S. are, when they're massaging their numbers in terms of how they present their fall classes, that's going to be a lot of that conversation that we're going to see. So it's interesting as we move through this process, when the dust settles finally from the fall, with all the comings and goings and the transitions from in-person to hybrid, or hybrid to fully online, or from in-person to fully online. All of those scenarios are happening right now as we speak, as well as some that started to make decisions to be online back in April, May, are now seeing the benefits of that now with the relative ease of transition to the fall term. And spending the time and money and resources that they needed to work out all the bugs, certainly from the spring when they had to go online midterm, to be able to present a much more comprehensive and, frankly, valuable online experience for international students as they're educated, as well as domestic ones, but for our purposes, the international ones. So we hope that gives you a little better sense of what we're talking about here with our answers to those three questions, and we certainly invite your comments and feedback. Happy to have the discussions with you on our Facebook page during the live session, and we'll keep up with those as we can. But also, this may serve to be food for thought for future presentations that we do here on the Roundup. And looking forward to hearing from you again as to what you're dealing with this fall. It's certainly a very interesting time to be alive on a U.S. college campus. So wishing you all the best of luck in the weeks to come, and look forward to catching up with you around the way. Have a great day.